The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM Today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations.
What will communities in Wisconsin look like in years to come? While none of us can predict the future, a group of faculty and students on the UWM campus are helping small towns and, yes, even big cities see the enormous potential for creating communities that are great places to live, work, and play. On this edition of UWM Today, we introduce you to the Community Design Solutions Center in the School of Architecture and Urban Planning. Joining us in the studio is Carolyn Eswine, who is a faculty associate and director of the center, and Ryan Shortridge, a graduate student in the School of Architecture and also a project assistant within the Community Design Solutions Center. Welcome to both of you, Ryan and Carolyn. Good to have you with us. So I mentioned in the opening that that you really are helping communities get the periscope up and see what their future could look like. Where did this idea ever come from?
It originated in 2000, where Dean Bob Greenstreet put the Design Center together. It was a relationship between various community groups, civic groups, and the university to look at how do we embrace the student activities and then give services to the different organizations.
So how does the center work?
We have a series of students. You have to be a student to be employed there other than myself. So I have two graduate students like Ryan, and they manage other students, and they're senior-level undergraduate or mostly graduate students, and they would be architecture students or joint students, so planning and architecture.
So if I'm living in a community or running a community here in southeastern Wisconsin or maybe even up north somewhere here in Wisconsin, how would I connect with this resource that you've got in the architecture school?
Basically, everybody comes to us. We aren't allowed to really go solicit work, so they'll come to our website or they'll contact me directly, and they'll ask. We have an issue that we want some help with. The groups we serve are, you know, nonprofit groups, civic churches, different communities. So they usually are underserved or they don't have the funds to go hire an architectural firm, for example. So they'll come to us, and the process is I'll sit down, meet with them, and talk about, you know, what is the issue that we're looking at. Are you going to remodel your church, or you're looking at a new park for your community? And then we'll bring the staff in. It's a really good experience for the staff to sit in on some of those early conversations before we put the whole scope together.
So is it sort of like a pro bono service that that the school provides?
Actually, it is not. They pay. It's different. It's not for credit. This is separate. So it's a good experience for the students. They can get their IDP through their architectural future licenses. So they come to us and we'll put together a small scope. It is subsidized, so they don't pay 100% of what they'd pay. They don't pay for any of my time. That's through the university. But they do pay for some of the hourly students. So it's very minimal, but it's enough that helps me cover the hourly staff that I get to hire.
So give us an example, a typical example of a project where a community group or a community itself, a city or a village, says, Carolyn, we need some help here. What sort of things are they asking you to do?
It's exciting for us and I think for the staff because they're all different scales. So one example is Washington Park Partners. They needed some help. They had a couple business owners that said, we want to look at some facade renovations. How can we change the front of our store? So there was a grocery store that said, we want some new signage. We want to have some new lighting. And so something as simple as us doing drawings for what could the building look like to Layton Boulevard West, where we'll do a whole neighborhood plan, or we'll look at the whole park. Burnham Park was a project we did in 2012. And we looked at how could this park be better utilized? How does it serve the neighborhood? So all our projects have some kind of connection to the community. It's to improve the neighborhood aspect, whether it's social or a service that they're providing. Some of the churches, for example, like we're working with Greater Galilee right now, and they serve 250 people every Saturday. So Ryan and the staff are looking at how to reconfigure their kitchen, but they're also looking at a bigger project. They want to build a daycare for children and for adults. And so we're looking at, on their adjacent property, how could you build a facility that has those functions, serves the neighborhood, and has this broader impact on the neighborhood.
So this is a lot more than just sort of a blue skying of what could be. Mm-hmm. You and the students actually are putting together plans.
Right. My background when I came into this, I've been practicing for several years. So my experience has been balancing the innovation and the vision with what's practical, what's feasible. I'm always mentioning budget, right? So we can't just give them some pie-in-the-sky idea because most of the groups coming to us don't have unlimited funds. Most of our work actually is used for fundraising. So we did a work with Mounted Patrol, the police department, to help them find a site for a new facility and explored their new facility, how it'll have an educational component. They'll bring in youth groups that'll see the horses, that'll see what those police officers do for the community. And so in that aspect, they're using our drawings right now to raise money and to raise awareness of that particular project.
Right. Let's bring you into the conversation because you're a graduate student. You're working in the center at the same time that you're completing your education. I understand that you've got a really, really interesting project that you were connected to that was really thinking outside the box right here in the metro area. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think you're referring to the New Berlin Industrial Park. We worked with Sheldon Lubar, and it was the southernmost piece of land in that industrial tract, and it hadn't been developed to that point. It was swampy. There was, I want to say it was, 50 acres, and 25 of those acres were wetlands or an environmental corridor. And we proposed, which is a little different than what most people would propose, was kind of enhancing the wetland. I initially told Sheldon we should put in more wetland, and he balked at that a little bit. Mm. But we used it as an amenity for the development, walking trails and viewing platforms for some of the users of the industrial park to have lunch out there. And I think it was a little atypical. And I think that's standard in most of our projects.
Because the temptation might have been, well, let's bring in the bulldozers and the dump trucks and turn it into more flat land.
Yeah, and the DNR doesn't want to see that, and the city doesn't want to see that. It was a garter snake habitat, the Butler garter snake. And so we wanted to preserve that, and there was a lot of wetlands and floodplains around the area that definitely constrained the site. And so in the end, there was a small portion that we deemed usable for development. And then we gave him about two or three different options for how to develop it. Office parks or light industrial, and then linking that piece also to the rest of the industrial park. So it's not only an amenity for itself, but it would kind of benefit the entire park. And it's kind of a signature piece right on the corner.
How tough a sell was that to convince a business person that this may be a great case to set aside land and not develop it?
We showed him a couple precedents of their medical complex in Wisconsin, and there was a number of others that they had a large, corporate center, and they kept their wetlands or they kept some sort of naturalized feature, and it makes the development a lot more appealing for people, for employees. Even if you're just looking out the window, it's nicer to look at something that's naturalized more than a parking lot or a grass field. And so I think it was tough at first, and then we showed them that other people were doing it, and we left the same amount of wetlands. We took out the part where I wanted to put in more wetlands. But after that, we showed him that it was kind of standard and it might be something innovative that would, bring corporate headquarters or something to the area. Then he was definitely interested.
So where did you get the idea from? You're not working full time yet in the field. You're still in school. Mm-hmm. Was it your education at UWM that prepared you for that, or was it through travel or through some other resources that opened up your mind to this different alternative?
Definitely. I mean, I think a lot of the faculty at UWM push, sustainability is key in, I think, all of the curriculum at the school. And I grew up in southern Minnesota, in Winona, Minnesota, and it's a very naturalized area. And I think it was just something, inside of me that resonated that I didn't feel right with, bulldozing or filling in these wetlands. And I wanted, and myself and the staff wanted to find a way to enhance it and keep it, and maybe have this development become a precedent for future development to show how it could be an amenity.
Carolyn, how typical is Ryan's story in terms of the successful selling of an idea to these community groups or communities that come to you for help?
I would say it's the norm. Most of the groups come to us because they're looking for something a little bit out of the norm, besides the funding aspect. In this case, the city was supportive, so we met with the city to talk about why has this property not been developed. It needed something unusual, and Sheldon and his group were obviously excited about a new opportunity. They wanted to maximize the footprint, but also look at, you know, how could this be a model for other projects? And so I'd say several of our projects become models for whether we're looking at live-work units in the city. How do you reuse a lot of the foreclosed structures? So could that be a model? So they're looking for innovative ideas. I would say occasionally we stumble a little bit when there's more of a maybe a constrained budget issue where they say, that's a great idea, but we don't have the funds for it. So sometimes they'll take a step back and fundraise a little bit more to get some of the newer ideas.
You know, just as an observer in the communities I drive around, I sometimes go past these abandoned strip malls, and I think, why didn't somebody do something about this, or at least design it differently so it's not such an eyesore when stores do move out and you're left with a, you know, pretty ugly, in my mind, urban blight. And the notion of introducing wetlands or keeping wetlands, for example, in this industrial park really sort of softens the edges, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah, and so are there opportunities for you to take a look at communities that need help that may not come to you? I mean, do you ever proactively go out and say, hey, our students or somebody in your community said, we should do something about this this area of the town or the city. Do you ever go knocking on doors offering your services?
We haven't had to because we usually have enough work coming to us. I also teach the capstone course in graduate planning, so those are clients that come in. There we do solicit, and some of those projects could turn into a CDS project where we get a little bit more detailed. And a lot of our projects have a design component, and not everybody's ready for that. So I would say we have a newsletter, and through that newsletter, we've had a few more people become aware of who we are and what we have to offer. So that might be something if we started to knock on doors where we see something. We've talked internally what would be a fun thing to do over summer, and we've said maybe we go out to other communities and say, do you have an issue, let's say, in an underutilized park where we could come in and take a look at that project over the summer? And that would be more on our perspective and get the client input. Most of our projects need neighborhood input, so it's the people that we're working with. They're the ones who benefit, so we want to make sure that they buy into this as well.
And I suspect for the students, Ryan, for you to be able to talk to people who are living in or near these developments is incredibly valuable as you prepare for your career.
Oh, very much so. I mean, I'm not from Wisconsin originally, and so I think CDS has, you know, it's gotten me into a lot of neighborhoods in Milwaukee where I wouldn't otherwise have gone. If I was just a student, I might just stay on the east side. But it's gotten me into, you know, very interesting areas of Milwaukee and the surrounding area. And I've got to meet some really great people that have very different stories to tell. You know, Sheldon and the city people and Layton Boulevard West, all these different neighborhoods, which I think really make up the fabric of Milwaukee.
Has working in the Community Design Solutions Center impacted what you want to do with your career, what you want to do with your life professionally?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not pro bono necessarily. I mean, we do a fee service and public interest design. It's kind of it's a growing field where it's some way how architects want to get involved with people who couldn't typically afford an architect's services. And, you know, some firms do a pro bono thing where, you know, 1% of their work is, you know, free for communities. And I think Community Design Solutions maybe sets a model where you can do a fee service, but it's a little, you know, the services you provide are less, and you can get communities actually to get these services.
And I suspect going down the road when you are employed and working in a firm or maybe starting your own firm, we have a lot of entrepreneurial students, that interaction with the general public and the business side of the equation will be magic in terms of helping you solve problems down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Carolyn, you're sitting there, and I can see the pride on your face.
Mm-hmm.
You're nodding, and you don't see it, Ryan, but I can see her glowing as you describe the work that you're doing. It's got to be incredibly gratifying, Carolyn, to have students like Ryan who are blossoming like this.
It's exciting to watch them grow because most of the students have never managed other students before, so there's a whole learning aspect there, but also being comfortable at the client meetings. I go to the initial client meetings, but then I intentionally don't go to the other meetings so that they are the ones running the meetings. So a lot of the past CDS employees have great jobs in the neighborhood. And I would say this generation is looking more at the neighborhood community-based projects. So Jasmine Skiles, for example, was an employee of CDS several years ago, and now she works for Layton Boulevard West Neighbors. And so it's exciting to watch that. But I would say the experience of also managing their time while they're in graduate school, that's another learning process. And just the skills that they're developing, I think most of them probably won't appreciate all of it till they're out for a few years. Those are the comments that I get later. Wow, that was a great experience. They know it, but later on they really appreciate it.
It's that hands-on experience right. that a mm-hmm. university like UWM offers mm-hmm. that often isn't available in other places.
Right. We have a lot of practice-based courses, but CDS is one of those because we are out there and because they have to look at a budget. A lot of the studio projects don't require the students to keep a budget in mind as they design. Here, that's part of it. But I think it's also very rewarding because the clients are very appreciative. So it's not just coming from my perspective, but I think when you're presenting to the clients, a lot of the people from the audience, the residents will come up or property owners will come up and say how wonderful this was. This was great to have a conversation. We've been running these large charrettes recently, bringing together developers and lenders and property owners and having a conversation with 80 to 100 people. The students are, you know, exposed to that and meeting a lot of different individuals in the community as well.
I want to talk about those charrettes in just a moment, but let me remind listeners that they are listening to WUWM, and this is UWM Today, our weekly look at the people, the places, the great programs at UW-Milwaukee that make a difference here in the community. So charrettes, intriguing name, mm-hmm. and looking at the research that I did for the program, some really pretty impactful results. What is a charrette, first of all?
A typical charrette is several days of a design discussion. So you'd bring a group of people together for 2 to 3 days. It's hard to find people who can spend 2 to 3 days with us. And this started with the Milwaukee or Martin Luther King project in Milwaukee. And when they first approached me, I said, well, you know, I think if design was the solution, it would have already happened. We have a lot of underutilized sites. They would have already been developed. So let's take a step back, and we have a series of focus groups that we do where we meet individually with a group of developers. We get their feedback. We select sites with whoever our client is for that particular, in this case, with City of Milwaukee and the Economic Development Corporation. We just completed Bronzeville. We worked with the Alderwoman Coggs, so that group worked with us. So we have several sites we look at. We bring developers together. We'll bring a group of lenders together. How do you pay for this? Because we can have great ideas that come from us or the architects, but if nobody can pay for it, then it really doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the neighborhood. And we met with a group of artists for Bronzeville. So we meet with different stakeholders before we get to the day of the charrette. And then the day of the charrette is a full day. There are architects assigned to each site. The developers come back, property owners, the city officials, and we really run a full day of generating ideas, and then they present midday to the group. And there's a full discussion of, you know, that's too tall, that's too dense, that's not the right use, this is great, where's the public space? And they go back and redesign. And so it's this balance of what is the vision, what does the neighborhood need, what do they want, balance with what the market will support.
How do the developers, the people who come in often with money or at least plans to raise money for projects because they're in it to ultimately make a profit, how do they react to interacting with you, Ryan, when you sit down and you meet a developer? Do they view you as a student or do they view you as someone who is capable of actually providing professional expertise?
I mean, I think initially they do view me as a student. I mean, I don't have, you know, knowledge as a developer or, you know, I don't know about tax credits or what would actually work in a neighborhood. And, you know, I sit through these meetings and then I usually kind of I'll raise my hand and, you know, kind of make an interjection that might not have been thought of typically. And it usually raises some eyebrows and they maybe think a little differently about, you know, what could actually work in these neighborhoods. I can't really speak to how to finance a lot of these projects, but I think they do take the students seriously because we have a fresh take.
Well, you don't walk in with the same conventional thinking, you know.
No.
Developers often develop or have a suite that of project approaches that are successful in one place and they try to replicate. And it sounds to me like you're not interested in accepting the cookie cutter approach.
I think students are a little more interested in trying something that might fail. And I think a lot of developers in the city don't. If something's failed once, you would never try it again. Or if it's never been proven, you would never do it in the first place. And I think students and, you know, CDS in general wants to try new concepts for areas that they've struggled for a long time, and I think it's the new concepts that might kind of break the mold and really revitalize these areas.
Do you see yourself living in some of these areas in need of revitalization?
I do. I currently live in the Harambe neighborhood with my wife, and so it's very interesting working on this Bronzeville project, this MLK project, because, you know, we work directly with Alderwoman Cox, and she's my alderwoman. And so it's really nice to have a stake and have a say. Yeah, I guess sort of. Yeah, we're both each other's bosses in some capacity. It's nice to have a say in what happens in my neighborhood and actually, you know, get my hands a little dirty in what's going on.
Carolyn, I wanted to bring up the project up in Wausau. You did something really interesting up there. And again, this is, I think, a really good illustration of how the impact of the School of Architecture here in Milwaukee is felt way, way, way beyond the city of Milwaukee. Describe what you did up in that community.
They were looking at a waterfront aspect and how to redevelop it. This actually was before I was the director. We followed the project to understand how much of that has been implemented, and they were able to receive some grants. So our work helped them to raise money to implement some of the smaller projects, like a boat launch or boat dock. But bigger scale is to look at how to revitalize a larger waterfront. Last year we worked down in Racine, working with the River Revitalization Group. So we looked at how to include trails as an overlook and bring people back down to the river. So we are working not just in Milwaukee. We're working in other cities as well.
And the Wausau project was interesting because the land you were working with was sort of a mess before you could even consider doing something on it. You had brownfields mm-hmm. there.
Yes, actually many of the projects, they come to us because they're not the easy projects. So we looked at how could they be revitalized and help the city look at, you know, different funding options. At that time, that's not our expertise, but we can give them ideas of where to go to get additional funding.
Brian, how about your fellow students? When you are walking on campus and get into a conversation with folks in the School of Architecture, or maybe business, engineering, what's the reaction you get from students when you begin to describe how you're working so closely with both the business community and the people who live in these neighborhoods?
I think it definitely piques the interest of a lot of students that they just kind of live in academia. And this is, I mean, Community Design Solutions is something that takes our academic work and, you know, kind of feathers it out into the community. And that definitely interests a lot of students because there's not a lot of programs on campus that really have the outreach that we do. A lot of people are very interested. We're hiring right now. And so there's a lot of students coming to me and asking me what we do, what they could do with us. And some students that have came to the school from other institutions knew about Community Design Solutions, and it was one of the reasons they came to UWM was because we had this program that had this outreach component.
Yeah, you could flex your muscles while you're still learning.
Yeah,
has it affected the type of courses that you want to take? Are you studying anything differently or looking at the area of planning differently as a result of working in design solutions?
It's actually somewhat the converse of, you know, it's not pushing me to do more pragmatic work in my schoolwork. It actually kind of pushes my schoolwork to more theoretical type stuff. And then it's nice because it creates a great balance because, as Carolyn said, I mean, a lot of the work we do is somewhat speculative, but it's really nice, you know, working with Riverworks Milwaukee, they need projects they can build. And so I just met with Chris Grant yesterday, and we were talking about, you know, like very simple bench concepts that they could, you know, get a grant for and build this summer. So we do a lot of speculative work, but we also do very pragmatic, you know, understandable work that would have a visible impact on communities.
And it must feel fantastic when you look at the results of your work, when you see something substantial there, like this industrial park in New Berlin, where you preserve the wetlands. You must feel a real sense of accomplishment knowing that you had a hand in that.
Yeah, it's really nice at the end of the day to see your mark on it and to see that, you know, we didn't compromise our values, that we chose to do something that we believed in, and we convinced the client to allow us to have that be the final product that we proposed for their piece of land.
And it didn't hurt the business results of that park. In fact, probably improved it in terms of making
it
more
attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carolyn, we talked about developers and the relationship that you and the students have interacting with folks who want to build something. Mm-hmm. What about other architecture firms or planning firms? Do they see you as competition?
I don't believe they do. I think if they follow what we're doing, we're creating new energy, and they could actually follow us up and implement many of the projects. So most of the projects, we can only go through design concept, and we can't do construction drawings. So, for example, with, you know, the mounted patrol, you know, somebody, a local architect, hopefully will come in and bid on that project and build that for the city of Milwaukee. So I don't think it's more a competition, but I think it's energy, and we look at the students we're providing. That's the other thing. They're future employees for many of these firms.
Is that, in fact, what happens? Is this a pipeline for feeding our students today into jobs of tomorrow?
Well, I think because if you work at CDS, you come out with work experience. A lot of students try to get some kind of experience, and it's not typical that you get the management experience that some of them have and work so independently. So I would say it's an advantage to hire one of our students, right?
They don't have to break them in, right?
Right.
Ryan, you're already broken in.
So. I just don't like to lose them. When they graduate, I lose them.
Yeah, yeah. So the future, where do you see the Community Design Solutions Center going 5 years from now? Are you going to be doing the same sort of work, or is there something out there that you haven't been able to try yet or would like to expand into?
I think we're growing, and so I want to be able to actually bring in more students so we can work on more projects. Typically, we've been, you know, the Wisconsin area, mostly the Milwaukee metro area. If we could grow a little bit beyond that, public interest design, as Ryan mentioned, is a bigger concept, and so I think getting, you know, involved with that nationally, I want us to speak at a couple national conferences to highlight what we do, to explain to other universities, but also the general public and other practitioners what we're doing. So growing it a little bit and thinking beyond some of the small projects. We also are looking at how do we get more integrated with the curriculum, bring in a few more students that way.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize, but UW-Milwaukee has the only school of architecture in the state of Wisconsin. So if you are up in Bayfield, Wisconsin, or Sister Bay, or somewhere way north of Highway 29, there's no place else to turn if you're looking for an organization like yours to provide that assistance or that helping hand.
Right. We're the only school of architecture, and also just the basis of working with the communities is a strong component for our school and also the university.
So if I'm listening to the program and I'm living in a neighborhood that maybe needs some advice, or maybe a city here in southeastern Wisconsin, how do I get a hold of you folks? How would I follow up and make a connection to get some of the great free help, almost free help, mm-hmm. From people like Ryan?
Well, we have a form on our website, so it's uwm.edu/CDS, and they'll find my email there. My name would be hard to spell. So they can look for me and contact me directly. They can also call the School of Architecture, ask for Carolyn Eswine, and they'll find me. And we usually just go out and meet. We met with the Pastors United group this week to talk about housing redevelopment in the city of Milwaukee, and they're trying to figure out how they might utilize our services and impact the community at the same time.
Terrific, terrific. So that's Community Design Solutions Center in the School of Architecture at UWM. Well, folks, thank you so much. Fabulous, fabulous program you've got going. Carolyn, thanks for taking such
thank
good
you.
Care of not only your clients, but students like Ryan. And Ryan, best of luck to you as you prepare for your career in planning and architecture. Wish you the very best. Carolyn Eswine and Ryan Shortridge, our guest on this edition of UWM Today, talking about community design solutions serving the community. Well, that's all for this week's program. As usual, we thank you for taking a few minutes to spend some time learning about the folks at UWM and the great work that they're doing on behalf of the people who live here. We'll see you next week at the same time, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.